When Mexican President Felipe Calderón declared war on the drug cartels in 2006, for many Americans, that was the first that they'd ever heard of drug cartels or, in fact, any of the large drug criminal enterprises in Mexico. But that has been going on for a very long time. Since that war was declared, by the way, 45,000 Mexicans have disappeared, died, or fallen victim to mass executions. Among them, more than 2,000 public officials, lots of innocent bystanders, and some journalists as well. We're joined now by one journalist who's been covering this ongoing conflict, Joan Grillo. He's a British journalist based in Mexico. He's been investigating the drug war since before Calderón declared it. 10 years you've been there, and you have a new book out called El Narco, Inside Mexico's Criminal Insurgency. Good morning.
Good morning.
Why do you use the word insurgency?
Well, it's the terminology in this conflict is very charged, and people are very sensitive about the words people use. In Mexico, when you do say the word insurgents, they're very sensitive. Insurgents were the founders, the heroes who created Mexico and got rid of the Spaniards. But we have to understand the conflict in Mexico has gone way beyond the realms of regular organized crime. If you look at Al Capone, we think of Al Capone as a big organized crime boss. In his worst massacre, he killed 7 people. In a single massacre in Mexico, we've seen 72 people shot dead. We've seen mass graves with 200 victims. We've seen extraordinary criminal things happen. And criminal groups who are overwhelming the government and the police. They attack police bases every day. Groups of 50 guys with RPGs, AK-47s and belt-driven machine guns. And we have to start using our words and terminology that can really make sense of this.
And in fact, it's not just the violence that seems just with incredible proportions, but the way in which the drug cartels and the drug business has become part of Mexican culture and life. In your book, you have pictures of ornate, incredible tombs for drug traffickers, and standing in front of them, of course, the drug balladeers. This has become sort of part of a way of life and a culture with roots that go very deeply into Mexican society.
Yeah, well, drug cartels have been around, or drug traffickers have been around in Mexico since Washington, D.C. first made drugs illegal. Right back in 1914, when the Harrison's Act was passed, and they first started making opium and cocaine illegal, people trafficking it from Mexico. So the groups have very deep roots in these communities. Like they say, there's a whole style of music called the drug ballads, where the drug traffickers will pay people to write ballads about them, about their exploits. There's a whole style of houses, even. They call it like an architecture of houses with like kind of Greek pillars and jacuzzis and kind of, you know, weird things.
And it's a Wild West sort of cultural feel, but it also fuses with this sense broadly in Mexico that I think has gone on for about as long, that the ruling party in Mexico for generations, it's now ruled by a different political organization, but in general, the Mexican government has been viewed as a form of organized crime in its own way, not necessarily as democratic as you would expect.
Well, that really gets to the heart of this whole issue here and why this conflict is happening right now. I first arrived in Mexico in 2000, right as the PRI were losing power after 71 years in office.
Yeah.
So it's a time of celebration, a bit like people are seeing in Libya or Egypt right now, a time of ending democracy and starting a new chapter. And people were very optimistic about, you know, this democracy and freedom, and there's big hopes about that. And now 10 years later, we're talking about, you know, is Mexico a failed state? We're having, you know, an incredible level of violence, business people being kidnapped, journalists being shot on the street. So what has happened? And one thing is, like you say, the PRI, they're in power, they're an authoritarian one-party state, but they did have a way of controlling organized crime.
Well, dictatorships often do.
Yeah.
And that happened in South Africa as well. The resurgence of democracy in South Africa produced an extraordinary crime wave that didn't go away for a decade.
Exactly, and in Russia as well, when you had the Soviet Union collapsing. So what's happened in Mexico is much of the state has fragmented, and you have former special forces soldiers becoming mercenaries. You have agents, you know, sometimes spies hiring out to drug cartels, and the cartels really fighting to control parts of the state and parts of the country.
Take over from the government, actually be in control of certain areas.
Well, really be a kind of shadow, a predatory shadow government. I mean, you look at Acapulco right now, they're charging school teachers extortion money. You have to pay to...
We've reported that story, yes.
I mean,
it's horrible.
Tragic. Now, why do they do that? Now, obviously, they want to make some money, but also it's a form of social control. If you just say, you know, you have to even pay us to teach at your school, you're really exercising a control in that area.
Is it different in Chiapas in the south versus Mexico City, which is very urbanized, versus the north border areas up near Juarez?
You find every part of Mexico has got its own dynamics and its own situation, and it changes from place to place. In Ciudad Juarez, you have a big street gang scene, a kind of LA-type street gang scene, which became very involved in the drug war. Down in Michoacán state, you didn't have street gangs, but you had kind of these community, you had people who got kind of country cowboys became very involved.
Yeah.
So it varies massively. Now, some parts of Mexico are still very safe. I mean, the resorts, the Caribbean resorts of Cancun is still fine. If anyone's going on holiday, you can still enjoy a great holiday there. Mexico City is kind of bubbling away. It's not really any more dangerous. In fact, it's safer than New Orleans.
But one of the great things about your book is that you're really examining sort of what it is about Mexico that made this environment possible. Many countries have problems with drug organizations, problems with both drug traffickers and criminal organizations. Why in Mexico did it go to this extent? Well, it was what you're calling basically almost an uprising there. And if we know what caused that, does that give us a hint as to how to end it?
Sure. I mean, this is a really crucial central question. And I think it's very important for this book to make sense of this, because I understand in the United States you see these massacres and so forth. It's hard to make sense beyond like an endless death toll. So really, like I say, in Mexico, it's about a fragmentation of the state. It starts to change from like people fighting over the cocaine trade and over the drug trade to drugs financing these cartel insurgent groups. And that actually becomes a war being financed by them to fight for the real power. Now, I've actually had the chance to interview many people inside the drug cartels. I've interviewed assassins, smugglers, lawyers who work for them and so forth. And one interesting thing, talking to these assassins, often they see themselves as being combatants in a war zone. You know, I tried to ask them and understand, how have you committed these murders? How have you decapitated people's heads while they were still alive? And some of the people I've talked to have done these kind of crimes. They've told me this. And they say they're just trapped inside a war zone. They often are recruited when they're young, as teenagers, adolescents, have no way out of this and are in a major war zone and kill many, many more people.
Does it scare you to talk to such people?
It does scare me, and I think it scares any journalist covering this. It's a very intimidating, violent environment.
And it's a place where the journalists have been killed.
The journalists have been targeted. You have to be very careful. You have to censor yourself to an extent. You have to. In my book, I don't want to tell secrets about these organizations that can compromise them, but I do want to make sense and tell the human stories. I think it's important to reach these people and tell the human stories, not to justify it, but just to explain that these are human beings. Because, you know, the world. One thing the world is so stunned about this, when you see a part of 35 corpses,
yeah,
or 12 severed heads, you wonder, how can a human being do this? And they all start as human beings, and how do they come to being cold-blooded killers?
The new book is called El Narco, Inside Mexico's Criminal Insurgency. Juan Grillo, thank you so much for joining us.
And if you're in the New York City area, Grillo will have a book reading tonight at the Half King Bar in Manhattan, which does all kinds of journalist readings, and he's in good company there. That starts at 7 p.m. right here in New York City. More of The Takeaway online, where you can keep this conversation or any other conversation going. Listen back to our interviews on Mexico, Egypt, the latest from Congress, and more. We talk about everything you see in the news, and you can weigh in at thetakeaway.org. And if you want to jump start on the next day's show, sign up to get our text. Text the word START to 69866, and you can get the conversation going. And join our project at Facebook, which is we're trying to upgrade holiday music, come up with our own hit. Actually, it's both upgrade holiday music and take advantage of the fact that almost anyone can produce a hit album around this time of year. Go to thetakeaway.org to find out how you can contribute lyrics to our project. I'm John Hockenberry.
And I'm Celeste Headlee. This is The Takeaway.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.